Do you want to do the intro?
I do. I'll do the intro.
Go for it.
The intro is Lindsay Flanagan, superstar, ASICS marathoner, and all-around couch friend of ours. So this is going to get weird. Yeah, because I feel like it's a different kind of friend. Like we could sit on a couch with Lindsay.
True.
And chit-chat, and the conversation's good, like it was post-Olympic trials. When we got there and saw her whole family, she abandoned her family and sat with us and we sucked up all our energy. Anything that you had left that day, we took it.
No, it was great. It was like I was with the family at like the rooftop, whatever, the hotel bar. And my parents are buying bottles of wine. And then you guys showed up and I was like, oh, this is awesome. And so it was a great excuse to take a little break from their chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy because you had a clan there. Like who all was there for you?
Yeah, well, my brother lives in Tampa, so they had no excuse. They brought, like, the baby. The whole family came up. The family came from Chicago because it's freezing. They were loving it, like, getting out. And then my sister came from Boulder. So we had, like, a pretty solid crew, and we really took over the Sky Bar or whatever it was.
Yeah,
that was a ton of fun. Well, for us, you were probably pretty exhausted at that point, but it was such a fun day.
Yeah, it was an emotional day, but you know, I'm glad it was fun and I'm glad that you guys had a good time.
Well, it was actually one of the most interesting things for us because I don't like a lot of times when we talk to people, they've had time to process, they've had time to evaluate it with their coach or look back and all that. This was like raw nerves, Lindsay, like you were still like war wounds, like out there. And so it was fun to just be able to like kind of be in the moment and kind of go through it with you and kind of like be able to get like unfiltered conversation and reaction to the day, which was a ton of fun. Some of the stuff we can't even mention here, so we'll just leave that.
No, and like for sure it is hard. It's because you have like all this family and these friends come, and I don't even think I had 10 minutes to myself. Like, I think I changed and immediately met them because like, they're there to like celebrate regardless of how it goes. So like, you don't have time to even think about it. And then you guys were like the first people I actually like talked to about. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I need to process all of this.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see that someone at your level, like at peak performance, also has the same like feelings and goes through the same processes as us like amateur runners do, where you know, like it's, if you have a hard day, like it takes a while to process it. And it's like, there's like a ton of emotions and it's just like, there's like a lot happening, not only physically to you on the day, but emotionally.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like this thing you think about for so long and then it's over. And that's another emotional component where you're like, what do I even think about? This is all I've thought about for what, like 16 weeks? Like, where do I go from here?
Yeah. We were chatting briefly about like what's next. And it's like, you know, you're already trying to figure out like, how do I put a new race on the calendar?
Yeah. What's next was an awful question for us to be asking that night. But my question is, so like a lot of times I think people want to just OTQ. They just want to get to the race and that's their goal. Clearly from your reaction and the way that you were feeling, you had a different goal going in there. How much did you feel like before the race started, your chance of going to the Olympics were like, where was your mindset going into that race?
Yeah, I went to Australia, which was awesome and had such a great training block there. And like training at sea level was magical. I was like, I feel amazing. Like, this is great. Like you're hitting all these workouts. And it was really fun because I think, and I'm sure you guys can relate to this, like when you're working out the same place, like every day, or you have like, you've done all these marathon buildups in the same spot. You're like comparing all your workouts. You're like, okay, I've run this fast on this loop. This is what I know. So it was awesome to just like get away, be somewhere totally different and not have any of that like in the back of my mind. But then kind of the way training came along, it was just like, it was seamless. Like it was really good. I mean, I was like hitting like my highest mileage, which is like, you know, that's one thing, but like to be able to like still run really quality workouts when you're running like 140 miles a week, I was like, wow, like I feel so good. And even the week of the race, like that was the best I had ever felt going into like a race. Like even like the day before, like you normally feel terrible. You're like, oh my gosh, like how am I going to run tomorrow? And I was like, I feel amazing. This is crazy. And so kind of like the whole buildup, we just like, approach it as like, I'm going to make this team. Like, you have to tell yourself that. And I really did believe it. I was like, oh, I'm not here just to, you know, show up and like have fun. I'm here to like actually make the team. And I know that I can like, you know, race in a championship setting. So I was actually really excited about that. Like, I knew that you needed to probably be in like 222 shape to make the team. But I was like, I don't know if that's what you're going to actually have to run, which is what you did have to run, you know, to make the team. So I felt like I was in that fitness and like all the workouts kind of showed that. And of course you like see these workouts and you're like, oh, but does that actually translate on race day? But I really thought that it would. So I went in like super confident. So yeah, it was tough when that, you know, it didn't happen.
Okay. I have a million questions from all of that. But first one, you mentioned Australia, sea level. Sure, there's a lot of sea level places, though. Why Australia?
So I live in Boulder, Colorado, and the weather, it's just unpredictable in the winter. And I was like, you know what? We are going to take that stressor completely out of the equation. But of course, like I could have went to Phoenix. I could have just went to Orlando. Like I didn't need to go across the country or across the world. But my coach actually lives in Australia. We were chatting and she's like, it's actually so normal. Like, and I realized this, like athletes from other countries, they go abroad to like training camps all the time. But in the US, we're very lucky. Like we have a lot of places here where people don't always do that. But I was just like excited about going somewhere new. And I was like, if you're going to leave for 14 weeks, like you don't have to go to, you know, Phoenix, you can go somewhere else. So I actually ran the BAA half and left straight from Boston early November and went straight to Australia. I actually learned I took the longest flight that you can actually take. I think it was Houston to Sydney. It was like 18 hours and there was probably 10 of us on this flight. I don't know how it took off. But yeah, I was like, it's going to be summer there. It's going to be hot. I wanted also a climate that was pretty similar to Boulder where I think you can overdo humidity a little bit. Like if you're training super hard in heat and humidity for like 12, 14 weeks. I was like, I don't really want to run myself into the ground, but I do want to like constantly like be in a warm spot. So where I was in South Australia, Adelaide, it was like, I think the day I left, it was 104 degrees. Wow. So it was very hot. It was like decently humid, but I just kind of did similar to what I did before World Champs, where it was like the summer in Boulder, you know, 90s. And then I would just do the sauna for, you know, 4 weeks before the race.
All right, I'm going to back you up a little bit before we go back to Australia. You can ask a follow-up question to Australia. But the first thing I want to get to is this is a thing that I always find fascinating when we talk to middle distance and track athletes versus marathoners. It really is you can have a day or you can not have a day and any distance. They're not as painful when it's a middle distance or a short distance race because you can reload in a week or two. Or exactly. sometimes less. What like that? This is something I think that every amateur marathoner can relate to you as a pro. What happens to your mind when you realize that today is not the day and you've been working so hard for months leading up to an event like this? Like what is the process of the downslope and then how do you get out of it and go, okay, I can give this another shot?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think like mid race, especially in like a race like this, but I think anyone can relate to this, whether you're like at the Olympic trials or you're racing, you're seeing your goal time like slip away or for like, in my case, I'm seeing top three slip away. And it's really tough because you're running and you're noticing that like everyone around you is dropping out and you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm not making this team. Like this is miserable. But then you totally have to reframe your thinking. And I think I did go through that little like pity party for a little bit where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is getting away from me. Like this is such an awful experience. But I'm like, I did not just train in Australia for like 16 weeks and run all these workouts and mileage, like for no reason. I was like, whether it's like my day or not, like I have to finish this. And I think, you know, I mean, everyone has their reasons for stopping too, but I've actually never dropped out of a race. And of course there's, you know, if you're injured or something, you can, but I was like, I'm not hurt. Like I might not feel good, but I'm going to like finish this for like at least my support team, for myself. So I'm glad I did that. And then of course you finish and you're immediately like, okay, what's next? Like, what can I put myself into? And I'm like, talking to my agent that afternoon, I'm like, okay, can we run this race? Can we do this? He's like, maybe we just like wait like a little bit, like maybe like give it like 2 weeks. Like you're pretty like emotional right now. So I think you always also have to think that like your best days are ahead. Like if I would have been like, oh, okay, like, you know, I don't think I'll ever run faster or place higher. Like, I don't really have a reason to like race anymore. But I think when you firmly believe that your best days are ahead, then you always are kind of looking to the next thing. So I think I had that great training block and I was like, I know that I have a better race in me. And I'm like, obviously it didn't happen today, but it's going to happen one day. So I think that's what motivates me to like kind of sign up for the next race.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this after the race at the Sky Bar, but like leading into this, you were super confident and you were like, I mean, you were going for top three. So at what point in the race, like I'm assuming even through halfway, maybe you were like, this could still be my day. At what point did it change where you were like, maybe I am not going to make it?
Yeah. So I want to say like halfway, I remember, I don't remember the exact split, but I remember I was like running. I was like in no world ever wanted to lead until I feel like when you kind of take the lead, my kind of the way I think about it is like, you're taking the lead to stay in the lead. And like, I didn't want to do that like early at all, but I remember it was like halfway and I turned and I think it was like Sarah Hall was right next to me. And I remember I felt so good. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to do this. Like, I feel great. Like, I know I'm in the lead. Like, that's not really the point. Like, we're all kind of in this like bubble, but I felt really good. And then I started to have like, pretty shortly after that, you went out to like, I don't know if it was like the Milk District or what it was. I just call it like a park where there was like nobody and it was pretty tough. We got out there and all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, like my stomach is not okay. And like, you try and tell yourself you're going to be fine. You're like, oh, it's fine. Like it's going to go away in a second. But then I was like, oh wait, this like isn't actually going away. And so then we go around the park and like, we're going into that last lap, which I think you're at, maybe it was like 18 miles around that point. And I think that's when Fiona threw in the surge and all of a sudden I like couldn't respond. I felt terrible. I felt like I was like going backwards and I was like, wait, everything went from like okay to like so bad in like 30 seconds. And then I kind of went into like survival mode a little bit. And you know, it was like a struggle after that. But I would say even through like, you know, 25K, I was like, okay, I can still do this. Like my stomach's not feeling great, but like I've had a lot of races where my stomach hasn't felt great. But then it turned to like, oh, I'm not sure this is going to happen.
And at any point were you, because I feel like the ASICS crew, like all of you ladies came in, what was it like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 or something like that? Were you guys at all working together at any point or was everyone kind of in their own like solo races out there?
Yeah, I think everyone was kind of like doing their thing. I mean, of course, I was like, if we can have an ASICS sweep, that would be amazing. And I did see like going into like the back lap, I did see Betsy all of a sudden was like laying in the grass. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening up there? And then in my mind, I'm like, if I don't make this team, Sarah Hall better make this team. And like, you're like hoping for your teammates. And at that point, I thought I was like minutes behind everybody. Like you're going through your own, in your own little world. And it wasn't until I turned the corner for that final, like, I don't know how long the stretch was. I saw just like a sea of ASICS people. And I was like, wait, we're all actually like really close. And I like didn't realize that, you know, there was probably like 20 second span for like, you know, the four of us. So that was, it was cool for like the brand and for all of us to like be able to have that moment together. But I really, when I knew I was probably not going to make it, I was like, those women better get it. Like, you know, you just hope for that.
Yeah. I'm curious though, when you're coming through and you, when we're watching as a spectator, we're watching stars rising and stars kind of plateauing. And maybe some people that have, this is their, how many times have they gone out for the Olympic trials? And is this their last Olympic trials? And you want to, like, it's, there's so much drama around this one event. As a pro athlete, do you see all that like going on? Is this event as important as an athlete as it is to us as a spectator to be watching like, oh, this is somebody's final shot at it, or this is someone's first shot at it, and all the weight that's involved with that? As an athlete running in it, is the race carry all that stress and sort of like a pivot in people's careers?
Yeah, and it's an interesting question because obviously like the Olympics is like the pinnacle. It's like everybody wants that. But like when you're in this race, like it also just feels like any other race. Like you think that it feels different. And like to me, like I never let the stress of that really get to me because like I hope that this isn't my last trials by any means. And the only reason, you know, I was like upset for Sarah was just because like she had fought for so long and like, you know, and she very much can make this team. And so It is interesting because it is this like huge event. There's a lot of stress, but it's also really weird. Like when it's over and like everybody kind of moves on and you find these other races and you can still do so many cool things in this sport if you don't, you know, make the Olympics. So it is this high pressure event, but like when we were actually racing, it felt just like it could have been Boston. It could have been just like the US champs. Like it didn't really change the way I like thought about the race. Cause as soon as you start stressing about this, like, oh my gosh, this could be my last trials. It's like, oh my gosh, no one wants to have to think about that, you know, in the middle of the race.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that was curious as an outsider looking at it. And it was, you know, it's not a huge field. So when you say it's like a Boston or something like that, and I know that when you guys are running that, it is, you guys are so far out in front that it is similar to that. But from a spectator standpoint, when we're watching it and we see somebody who's 20 people back or, you know, pretty far back, like there's no shot in making it. And it was a hot day. You're out in exposed in the sun. Unless you just want to finish the trials, I'm like, what are there some athletes that should, are, you know, do they have this fortitude to just be like, I want to finish, or should they drop out and be like, yeah, there's other events, I'm not going to make the team, or is it that important to finish the trials that you think you hold on?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, because look at, we saw Betsy, you know, she drops out and then she goes to Tokyo. What, I think that was like a 2-week turnaround and she runs
crazy
219. I was like, should have I just went to Tokyo? Like, I mean, I did it last year. We could have done it again. But yeah, and I think everyone has their reasons. And if like, I mean, obviously I thought Betsy was in phenomenal shape. So I really thought she was also going to make the team. So again, like everybody has their different reasons, but yeah, it is. It's very challenging to finish when you know you're not going to be in the top three, but then you also just have to think of it as any other race. Like if I'm not coming in the top three at Boston, like I'm still going to like fight to the finish line. So that was kind of and when it's like a hot day and it's just like a little bit tougher, you're just like, man, I have to get through this.
So in the Olympic trials, there's no race money. It's all for the chance.
No, there's race money.
Is there?
Yeah. Right. Okay. Isn't top 10?
There actually was. And like, so I didn't look at the money like before, because for some reason, some people can get like really motivated by that. But like, I don't know, when I'm like suffering, like money, that doesn't really motivate me. So I like didn't look at it before. And it's like always like a nice thing afterwards when you're like, oh, there was some money, but there actually was like a decent amount, which was nice. Like when you finish, you're like, okay, well at least I financially made some money out of that.
But you're more like Clayton Young, where you don't care about the money and you're going to let someone run out.
Yeah, I did finally watch the men's like finish. And yeah, that was, you know, it was crazy. But Clayton, he's a good guy. We're thrilled for him. And, you know, he has bigger things that he cares about. So,
yeah. We also talked about, and Thomas, I think, was kind of like hitting on this, and we talked about how like it's one day, and you were like, if I had raced this tomorrow, maybe I would have been on the podium, maybe I would have been 20th. Like it's just one day, and it's like everything has to align on that one day. And I know other countries do it a different, everyone has their own way of doing it, but how do you feel about it being set up this way versus maybe like a board who selects athletes?
Yeah. And it's funny. It's like, as soon as I finish, like I'm having this conversation with my sister and I was like, the marathon is all luck. Like I hate this race. Like it's all luck. It's 90% luck. And she's like, it's not 90% luck. I was like, no, it is. I was like, because you can have like nothing like stomach or anything happen, your whole buildup, and just one day it does. But I do think that like the trials, it is, I like our system. I like that we have a trials race, but I also kind of like how Japan does it, where they have like the top, they have a trials and technically like the top three make the team, but that final spot, they get to like, they set this time standard and then everybody has the opportunity to kind of like chase this third spot. And I think that's fun. Like, I think it's fun for like fans of the sport who are like, oh my gosh, is someone going to like knock this person out or beat this time? And it's like fun for also the athletes, because you're like, oh, there's still like a glimmer of hope. Like I can get in another race. Like I can give it another shot. Like maybe on a day, maybe it didn't come together today, but if I have one more opportunity, maybe it comes together that day. So I do love the trials. Like I love the drama of it, I'm sure as a spectator is a lot more fun than as an athlete, because it is, it's very dramatic. So I do like it, but then I also kind of wish like that third spot was a little bit more like up for grabs.
Yeah. You ever seen people like throw their tickets after they're done gambling because they're like, ah, I just lost everything?
Yes.
I felt that's how the trials kind of felt for me at the end. I was like, everybody, I wanted to win. We picked Clayton, but that was about it.
So exciting for the people that make it. But yeah, like, wouldn't it be fun if you were just like, okay, but now there's like another element of drama where people can like chase this.
Yeah. There was a guy running for a marathon spot because they had a third spot in their country that didn't have a qualification time. And that was exciting. He was running a regular marathon and you're like, got really invested in just watching him to try to see if he could break it. But I mean, we got up and watched the Tokyo marathon. What time was that in the morning? Like,
no, that was at night.
Oh, was it night? We watched it.
Yeah.
I watched it on a pirated YouTube, like of someone filming the screen. And it was actually pretty funny because I couldn't figure out the whole like VPN thing. I don't know. It was all too confusing for me.
I don't know how we got it. Through like a regular station.
We purchased, it was either like FlowTrack or something. And so we got to watch it on TV, but there's been times where that's no better than like the pirated version. So
like Berlin Marathon on FlowTrack, they didn't have any commentators.
Yeah. It was so weird.
It was the worst.
Yeah. I mean, what I watched was pretty comical. And then I did actually get a hold of just a Japanese broadcast where it was all in Japanese, but at least I got to like see the race. And I did get to see like Betsy finish and everything, which was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Okay, let's go back to Australia real quick because I have a few more questions. Okay, we were just sent Tim Tams. Did you eat those while you were over there?
No, but well, I have celiac, so I couldn't eat the Tim Tams, but that is like such a popular thing. And there's like so many interesting, like little like Australian, like, I don't know, candies and snacks. And like, it is very much like America there. Like, it was very easy to travel to Australia. Like, there's no language barrier. Like, everything's pretty much the same. But yeah, like the people are so nice. And I don't know if you guys have been to Australia yet or if you're going to go to Sydney, but you would love it. It's fantastic.
I think I would. Are they like, we love your accent when you're over there?
They did. They like would ask all the time and like, oh, they would get me like confused with somewhere else. They're like, where are you from? And I was like, oh, from like the US. And I don't know what I got. I got like a couple, maybe like, I mean, it could have even been the UK at one point. And I was like, UK? No. But yeah, like everyone is so friendly. Like they go out of their way to like help you. Again, like I want you guys to like go to Sydney for Sydney Marathon because I feel like you would thrive over there.
I like it.
Okay, so other than your coach, did you know anyone over there?
So I knew Izzy Bat Doyle is another A6 athlete. And
that's a made-up name. That is a made-up name. Izzy Bat Doyle.
No, she's fantastic. Izzy, I mean, she just ran, what, like 2:23 in Valencia, and then she turned it around and ran like a 14:50-something 5K. So I knew her over there, and then I knew another woman, Jess Trengrove, who used to run for A6. She had just had her second child, but she was like, oh, I'll show you around, like, you know, help you as much as I can. And then my coach also knew some people that she was like, oh, this would be like a good person to like link up with training. So I really never had to do anything by myself. Like, always had people to meet. Like, it was really fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you miss family? And then like, because I don't know how many hours the difference Christmas. Is, but was it hard to communicate like back home?
It was funny. Yeah. It's like one of the only places in the world. It was 17 hours and 30 minutes, which was like very bizarre to have like an additional 30
half
minutes.
An hour.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a second.
Yeah. It was like, I have no idea what time it is. But it was actually helped. Like when I would get up in the morning, it was like, obviously like the day behind, but like later in the evening. So it did help. I think the couple of times it was hard was like when it was like Christmas or New Year's and like, you know, it's already Tuesday for me and I'm like going to do this really hard workout and the family's like waking up and doing presents and they're all excited. Or no, it's like later in the day, they're having drinks, they're having a great time and it's like early for me and I'm like, Christmas is over. I have this hard workout. Like I am not on the same page as you guys right now. So there was like a couple of times where you just like, we get a little bit irritated, but for the most part, it was great. Like, you know, talking with everyone at home.
Okay, and then best, like, I know Tim Tams were off the table, but what was the amazing food or anything good you had over there?
Yeah, so their Asian food is fantastic. So I feel like that's, like, all I ate. But then it's also Adelaide was, like, wine country. So they just, like, early on, like, in the block, I, like, went up to, like, some of the wineries and, like, the hills and got to do that. And then, like, I mean, they were very into, like, Pinot Noir and things like that. So I drank a decent amount of wine when I was there too. So honestly, no complaints.
I like a Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
It was good.
You're selling Australia for sure. Like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Sydney Marathon. ASICS, get them there.
Let's do it.
Okay. Add that to the list.
I know what you all wear.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that? Or because I have a... Let me do one more Australia question.
Are you going to ask about koala bears or those flying squirrels?
No, but okay. Now I am. What was that thing called?
The little sugar glider?
Did you see sugar gliders over there?
No. But I'm
okay,
so
we're on this...
I want to know what a weird sugar glider is.
Okay,
Google it.
Yeah, we're on this weird Instagram algorithm where people find like little tiny baby animals that are like the size of a thimble, and then they nurse them with like cat's milk or something. I don't know. And then they grow up and they're all attached to the person. So sugar gliders can like fly.
They're like flying squirrel things.
And this guy raises one from like the peanut size to like real. And now it's his best friend. It flies to him from trees and they cuddle and stuff like that. And then we started, there's another one that was some Australian thing. And yeah, there's a lot of little animals getting raised by humans.
And wait, are they Australian like natives, the sugar gliders?
I don't, we're not exactly, we didn't go into Wikipedia or anything. It just looked like Australia. I think I saw eucalyptus leaves and stuff. I don't know.
No, I actually never saw, everyone was like, oh my gosh, did you see like crazy snakes? And I was like, I didn't see any snakes, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
I did see some like really big spiders. I will say that was pretty scary.
I don't like that.
No, I didn't love that either. It was like a huntsman spider. Maybe it was like,
that sounds horrible.
Like biggest spider I've ever seen. And then
it's called the huntsman.
Yeah, the huntsman. I was like, what is this? I had to like Google it. I was like, is this poisonous? Because it was in the house and it wasn't poisonous, but I did like suck it up with like a Dyson vacuum cleaner, which I'm sorry to all the animal lovers, but I was like, I just can't like sleep knowing this is in the house.
No, I wouldn't wreck my Dyson. I'd never use a Dyson again.
No, I sucked it up and then I was so afraid that it was going to crawl out that I left the vacuum outside for the night. I was like, is that it has time to like escape like if it needs to?
Solid move.
Yeah, I don't like a spider.
No.
Okay, you do 130, 140 mile weeks. Explain this to me. Have you always been high mileage or was this like new for this cycle? What was that all about?
Yeah, I feel like earlier on in my career, like I started marathoning relatively young. So I think like probably my first 10 marathons, you know, I'm running like 80, maybe like 80, maybe 90 miles, like nothing crazy. And then like as you get older, you can just handle like a little bit more volume. And obviously now like with the shoes and things like that, like recovery is just, it's a game changer. Like you can like turn it around and do harder efforts and run a little bit more volume. But I think since working with my coach that I'm working with now, Benita Willis, we've just gradually kind of increased a little bit where like maybe I was doing 120 and then before Worlds I was doing 130 and then this time it was 140 and it was never like, oh, you know, we have to just like keep bringing up the volume. It just like was naturally happening when like workouts were getting a little bit longer or we're like experimenting basically like, you know, doing doubles after like long runs or doing doubles after like pretty long workouts on Friday where you're getting like a 30 mile day and you're like, oh wow, that was actually just like a really big volume week. But I think as long as you're able to like hit your workouts still and have like really quality workouts, like, you know, you're not overdoing it with the volume, because I think like if you're just going and running 140 miles, but you're like, I can't hit any paces, then you're like, well, this isn't really like worth doing this. But yeah, I think being at sea level too, I was like, oh, this is like between the shoes and like oxygen. I was like, I feel great. We could keep going.
How much of a gear nerd are you?
You know, not like, obviously like I love all the ASICS products, but I look back at what I was racing, like my very original marathons. And I don't know if you guys are the same way, but I think like my first marathons, like I was wearing like the Nike Streak, like back in like probably like 2015. And I was like, if you tried to wear that in a marathon now, I think you would break your foot. Like, I don't even think you could do that.
Yeah. I wore those for a marathon, the white ones with the Volt highlights on them. Yeah.
Yeah,
right before the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first time I think I broke 230, I was wearing like, a pair of like Mizuno, like, oh, if you could have seen what they were, I don't even know what they were called at like the time, but they were like basically a moccasin.
Yeah.
Do you remember your, like, the next day after that? Like, You couldn't walk.
I remember I thought I broke my foot. I remember I was like, oh my God, like I can't walk. Like I can't put pressure on my foot. Like, and recovery, it took like a month. Like I used to take 2 weeks off because I truly couldn't even walk for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. It is crazy, the recovery benefits.
Was this the shoes. Shoe?
Oh, geez.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's the shoe.
Yeah. Mizuno Hitagami. I ran a marathon in this one, too. We had similar choices. I think what it was back then was we sacrificed the cushioning for lightweight.
Exactly.
And so you wanted something light on your foot. And, I mean, you can look at these, and I'm holding them up to the camera right now, but that's like maybe 10 millimeters of foam in the front. And can the back, maybe 15.
Even? I feel like you could probably bend that shoe like in half. Yes.
I mean, there you go. I mean, you can't, it still had a plate in it, but yeah, this
the plastic one.
This was like peak Mizuno for me back in the day. Like, yeah. I just, these were fun. But they,
yeah, that was my marathon shoe for probably like the first 3 years.
And then, your feet, I would wear that, the Saucony, type A6, and there's a whole bunch of them that were like that were just, and you did, after you ran the marathon, it felt like your knees and your legs were just beat up. Mm-hmm. And that is what is so awesome. Like, I know that, like, definitely for you, you're getting the full benefit of a super shoe. You and Megan cranking them out, you're working the plate, you're getting all the advantages. I'm not quite as fast as you guys, but I still feel like the advantage I get from the setup with the plate and the foam, I don't know, like I do long runs and my legs feel great.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like even the training shoes now, like I train in like Nova Blast, Super Blast. I'm like, just the recovery of wearing those shoes on a daily basis. I'm like, this is night and day.
Well, that's how you can get up to like 140 miles a week. Like I don't think you could do that if you were wearing those old flats.
No, absolutely not. Like I just... there's no way. It really is a game changer. And I think, of course, like we're all like, oh my gosh, you can run so fast to them, which you can. But I'm like, it's the recovery. Like it's, I think that's the biggest game changer, is like you can just train so much harder.
Okay. So do you love the marathon grind? Like when you see that 140 mile week coming up, does that excite you? And you're like, I love doing this. Or do you get excited for like the down weeks when it's like, I don't know, maybe a 70 or 80 mile week?
No, I mean, I love it. I love the grind of it. Like, and I think I just love the challenge. And a lot of times we don't do the same workouts, which I think is good, because I'm like, there are some that like you repeat, but I really don't like ever like looking back and being like, this is what I hit for this race or this, this workout, because the context is so different. Maybe you're not running as much. Maybe you're doing like you're at altitude or whatnot, but no, I love like the grind of it. And there's something about like, just like getting to the midpoint of that workout and being like, okay, now I've got to go and like execute. And it's kind of like a race, but you kind of get, you get a little bit like nervous and excited when you see those like 30K, like long run type workouts. And you're like, man, this is going to hurt like the whole time, but I'm actually really excited for it.
See, as a person doing half the mileage in my peak marathon. So like I just finished a 65 mile week, which is pretty incredible if you think about it.
That's a lot.
But when you're what I like about those big weeks is, like you said, there's a challenge. But like when I was finishing my long run, I was like, when I finish this, I'll have gone over 60 miles for the week. And it kind of helps you get through that workout. So are you, when you're getting those max miles, you're like, I am putting together a solid week. And if I finish this run healthy, this is going to be, I don't know, the most, or in this training cycle, like what's going on in your head?
Yeah, I think like you get a little bit of, like excited. I mean, anytime like you finish the week, and I think there was only one time I like, and obviously Benita doesn't even like calculate the mileage. Like she won't tell me like this is what it's going to be. It just like ends up being. But like I don't know if your Garmin ever tells you like this is the volume, and it like shows like the number up at the top. I think I took a picture one time because it was like 142 or something. I was like, this is just absurd. Like I never thought I would see this, but it's more like you finish the week and you're like, okay, that was really hard, but like that didn't destroy me. And I think that's when I get excited, where you're like, oh, I'm like absorbing the training really well. Like this is actually exciting.
Emma hasn't hooked you up with a Coros yet.
I've had the same watch for like, I don't even know what this is, probably for like 5 years. I need to get more into the gear. I do.
Yeah. The gear's the fun part if you're not winning medals.
What are you doing in between your running to aid recovery outside of obviously the shoes that are helping?
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it's a lot of just like lounging. I mean, it was hot, so we were running early, and then obviously would have like a lot of time between runs. So it was just like taking a nap, like using the Normatec. Like I was getting treatment probably like at least once, if not twice a week, just like massage and things like that. And the exchange rate in Australia was fantastic. So you're like, everything's free, even though it was not free. But
king of the world.
Yeah, what about amazing.
What about Epsom salt bath? That's my go-to.
Yeah, I think because it was so hot, I like wasn't really into like a hot bath. But like if I'm in Boulder in the winter and I'm running that much, like, yeah, that's like a staple because you're just like freezing and it's just like a little bit like cranky and that kind of makes you feel a little bit better. But I wasn't really doing like, I don't really ice bath or anything anymore. Maybe I should get back into that, but.
I hear a lot of mixed stuff about the ice bath. What about the saunas? Those seem like they're the big rage now.
I want a sauna.
Yes. So I'm actually going to get a sauna for my garage because now I'm like obsessed with the sauna. But the research.
Which one are you going with before you get the research?
This is what we need to talk about. So I've been trying to do like a dive into saunas and I was like, okay, like infrared versus like the wet sauna. Like, I don't know. The research really isn't there to say if one is better than the other. I think the whole thing is you need to get it up to like a certain, I don't know, what is it? Like 170? I don't know the exact temperature.
Wow.
Yeah. But like, I mean, financial wise, like the infrared ones are much cheaper. So I'm like, If it is really like a very similar benefit, do you just go with the infrared sauna? I don't know. Which one are you guys thinking?
We do not have space for one. We do. We have space in the garage. I want one that you can pour water over the rocks. That's my thing.
That's what I wanted. Yes. And then I started looking into this and I was like, why are these $10,000 and the infrared ones are like only $1,000? And I was like, nope. You can buy an infrared sauna at Costco.
Lindsay, we need to work with you a little bit here. I think that you would be a great advocate for a sauna. And you know,
maybe if we just keep talking about it, you're going to get one.
Yeah, it'll just show up in your garage.
I would love that. Like I've actually like carved up space in the garage and like figured out where it would go. And I was like, and like when it's cold and you finish running, I'm like, how amazing that you just power that thing up and you finish and you just get right in there. Like that'd be so nice.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I would love it. And you know what? I have like a little cold plunge barrel right outside the door of that. So you could go hot, cold, hot, cold.
Amazing. Right there. And strictly from like a hygiene standpoint, like being in the sauna with a bunch of people at the gym, like it is just nasty. So I'm like, I think just like health wise, I think I just need one in the garage.
I remember it was during COVID and they were telling us you had to wear the mask in the sauna, which I did, but it's hard to breathe in 170 with a mask on. But there was this one dude who was one of those guys, you know what I'm talking about. The guys, the sauna guys. And like nobody wants to see this guy naked. He would come in full naked, no mask, and just be like, want to talk to you. Like, what's your story? I'm like, no, I have no story.
I put the earbuds in. And even when like your phone overheats and like obviously you're not listening to anything, but everyone thinks you are. So it's great.
No one bothers you.
Sometimes when it's busy and I probably shouldn't give this tip away, when I don't feel like talking to people, I just put my phone up to my ear like I'm talking and just walk with my head down. And you can go anywhere.
It's very similar. Earbuds, phone, it's like, don't bother me.
Yeah. You know who did that to me? Steph Curry. I had gotten an elevator with him at the Nike headquarters. It wasn't at the Nike headquarters. They were in town to play basketball against the Blazers, and the hotel that Nike put me up, he got into the elevator, and I look at him and he just nods his head like, yep, it's me, and put in his headphone and just put his eyes down. I was like,
that's, and you're just like, wow, that was a power move.
Yeah.
I know. I was like,
solid.
I was like, okay.
Okay. We kind of talked about shoes, but you didn't actually tell us what you raced in at the trials. I mean, I know, but tell everyone what it is.
I came prepared. Actually, Asics, I got a pair off the website and then they sent me a pair. But I raced in the Metaspeed Paris Edge. So typically I'll wear like the Sky Plus and things like that. But actually in this shoe, I kind of feel like they flip-flopped a little bit, which is a little confusing for people. But I would say for a lot of people that were wearing like Metaspeed Sky Plus, the Edge is actually pretty similar to that.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions about it then. So the Sky was the more forgiving of the two before, the Plus and the Edge. The Sky seemed more like your marathon shoe. There felt like a little more underfoot. And the Foam was a little more forgiving, even though I feel like that shoe is one of the firmer race day shoes out there. What's the difference now between if you got the Sky before, the Sky Plus, and the Sky Paris now? What do you feel like the difference is?
Yeah, I felt like, so I actually, I'll use the Sky Paris more for like speed work. There's something about it where like, it's pretty like aggressive, maybe like, I don't know, rocker, or I'm not sure what it is, but like, it can't really like get my, for like a tempo or like a marathon effort, like it just doesn't feel as natural for me. So like when I was doing track workouts, like the Sky Paris was fun. I was like, oh, this is like snappy. But I think this one, like, I think the rockers are like a little bit more gentle and it's not as chunky up here. I think if like, if you look at the Sky, it's really fat, like, on these sides. And this one's just a little.
On the medial side, it bulges out.
Yeah. And you can actually see it. Like it's like a big bump right there. And this one just felt a lot more natural. And it was funny when they first sent me the shoes, I like reached out to my boss, I reached out to Ben and I was like, are other people actually that used to wear the, you know, the Sky going towards the Edge? And he's like, oh, actually, basically like everybody. And then I think when I look at the trials, I think all of us minus maybe Clayton ended up wearing the Edge. So obviously it seems like, I mean, not for everybody, but the it seems like a more natural like marathon shoe.
Yeah, I feel like ASICS could have come out with like tested and just come out with the one shoe and it would have probably saved a lot of people confusion. However, though, I've been running in both and I do find I like both of them for different reasons.
Exactly.
And I'm actually like I understand why Megan likes the Edge Paris because you get some soft cushioning before you get that plate. So you kind of get a more, I think it's a more comfortable ride.
Yeah, it's definitely more comfortable.
But she loves the Alpha Fly and I feel like the Sky with the plate closer to your feet and then more foam underneath the plate, you kind of get that more like reaction underneath of the plate. You get kind of more a little pop off the toe. And I think that may be why when you talk about the speed, doing speed workouts, I found that when I was doing repeats in the Sky Paris, that it felt a little more like immediate pop off the toe versus the Edge. But I do think if I'm going long distance, I want a little more of that forgiving feeling from the Edge.
Yeah. And have you guys raced in it yet?
I did a half marathon in the Edge.
Okay. And what did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was great. And the night before though, I was walking around my living room with one Sky on, one Edge on. And I was like really torn because like I had a good 800 repeats in the Sky Paris.
See? Like, great for speed.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it. I think it's like the Sky feels a little bit more aggressive now and the Edge just feels a little bit more like a little bit more cushioned for like the marathon distance or any longer distance race.
Yeah.
The thing that's spectacular about both though is the weight and they weigh almost identical weight. And I don't know what your size, what size shoe do you wear?
I'm an 8. So I think it's like a men's 6.5. So I think, right around there.
Okay. So
that's the same size I'm wearing, which is like 5.2 ounces or something.
You're wearing an 8?
Yeah.
In this? Oh, wow. Yeah, 5.2 ounces. That's ridiculous. And my men's 10.5 weighs under 8 ounces or under 7 ounces. It's 6 something.
Crazy.
Which that's lighter than a premier competitor's race day shoe.
So are you contemplating, are you going to race full marathon in this? Or are you like...
I would. No, I definitely would. And I'm actually, it's funny. I'm more open, I think, to different race day shoes than Meg is.
Well, we're going to run Cherry Blossom. So I'm going to wear the Edge for that.
Yeah, but we're not racing.
No, but.
Are you going to throw down?
Because it's the week before Boston, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Normally you get like a couple weeks in between the two, but it's a week before. So you can't really get too crazy.
Yeah. Caster is like, jog it.
You're not running it, are you?
No, I'm not, but it's an ASICS race and I would love to do it. And I've done it twice. Like it's such a fun race, but I did notice that as well. It's normally 2 weeks before Boston, but this week it's very close.
Everything's messed up. And it's like Easter's this weekend.
No, it's in a couple.
Bizarre. Or, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it is this weekend.
Is it?
That's
one?
Why the boys are all off for
that's right.
like spring break and stuff.
Who knows what time is anymore? Mm-mm.
So you're not coming to Cherry Blossom. What race are you coming to?
Yeah, so it's a little up in the air. You know, I was like having a lot of fun getting back into training, like had a couple things, you know, lined up. And then, of course, like you make plans and your body says no. I have been dealing with like a little bit of an injury, kind of like stepped weird on some ice, which is why we go south in the winter, and just had a little bit of a flare up. So it's for the first time that I actually kind of had to be like, oh, maybe I need to like wait to put another race on the calendar. But we'll see, like hoping that things.
That's weird. I had heard that you're running the Brooklyn Half in May.
I would love to run the Brooklyn Half in May.
And then they said you were going to have a hot dog with us at Coney Island when you finished.
I've always actually wanted to go to Coney Island, which is a very funny thing because it's not that exciting. But I was like, but for me, it would be exciting.
Well, you could run as fast as you could to get there.
Yeah, I've actually wanted to do that race. I think it was maybe the past 2 years. I think it had gotten like really hot, hadn't it? Like got a little bit crazy. But
yeah,
I mean, it was kind of fun though. Like where you're just like, all right, I'm just going to go compete, see what happens.
Well, last year was weird because it was warmer, but it wasn't the warmth that got you. It was super humid.
And it rained.
So,
yes. Yeah.
But I will, just real quick to go back to this guy and the thing, because I remember some. So I was walking around my living room with one of them each on, and I messaged a friend, Paul, who you may know from ASICS, and I said, which one? And he said, what's the terrain? Like I said, there's going to be like 800 feet of elevation. He was like, go at the edge plus.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Cares.
Edge Paris, yeah, Edge Paris.
Yeah, and it is a little confusing, I will say. I kind of at first was like, oh, no, maybe they should have come out with one because people will get confused. But then you wear both of them and you're like, oh, but they're so good for different things. So you need both.
And they should sell a subscription. Just get them both. But yeah, and I it's a fun shoe, light and all that. But yeah, we talked about that. I'll let that roll.
Okay. This is a very important question, Lindsay. Do you remember the last time you came on the drop?
Okay, I'm going to say it was during COVID. Was it like after London COVID where we did the loops in the park, or maybe before then? I can't remember exactly.
It was October 9th, 2020.
Yes, that was. It was right after London.
So crazy.
We've done, this will be one, this will probably be in the 250s as far as
episodes.
And do you guess which episode you were on of the drop? What
number? Oh, man. It had to have been early. I mean, because 4 years, I'm saying. Maybe like number like 8?
5.
So close.
Yeah. Yeah. It was you and Ilya Kipchoge. That was it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, I remember like it was a really long time ago and it seemed like COVID because like I was trying to remember the house I was living in at the time and I was like, no, it had to have been like 2020.
Yeah, that's if you nuts. Had asked me that, I would have said, oh, we probably talked to Lindsay like 2 years ago, but no, it's been 4. So
yeah,
I guess thank you for coming on this show at number 5. We were pretty much just talking to ourselves.
And me.
Yeah. You've accomplished quite a bit since then. Obviously, we hit on the trials a little bit. Talk to us about your big PR, your 2:24 in
That was in 2022. I ran the Paris Marathon that year, which was like, it was a great, you know, it was a fun race, but it was very difficult. Like I should have done a little bit more research, like going into that one. Like it was a women's only start, and then it was very similar to like a New York. I think you gain like 800 or 900 feet of elevation. And I was just like, man, I should have known that going in. So I kind of came off that was April. And I was like, oh, I want to do another marathon. Like I'm feeling pretty good. Like, I don't think the fitness showed as much in that one. So then I did Gold Coast, which I think was only, might've been like 12 weeks later, which is like a relatively quick turnaround. Yeah. So like a mini kind of training block for that. And then went to Australia and ran the 2:24, which was fun.
And that you won that marathon, right?
She likes Australia. I think you belong in Australia.
I love Australia. I know. And I don't know if you guys saw that they just changed the Sydney Marathon course. Apparently it's like a little bit more forgiving. They're starting it at 6 a.m, so it's not as hot. So I was like, Australia's like just draw. It wants me to come back.
I know. I hear that there's potential for that. If you run it and it does become a world major, you'll automatically still get your star.
Oh,
if you do it like the next couple of times. Not that you're collecting stars, but you know, I think that's cool. And hey, you mentioned your boss earlier, who I know and love, but does he also help? Like, if you wanted to run a race, is he the one who gets you in that race?
So if it's an ASICS race, and it's like a high profile race, like a Tokyo or something where like everybody wants to do it. And I think like having the ASICS connection last year, and my agent also works with a lot of the Japanese, but it always helps. And I've done a lot of ASICS races, like Gold Coast is ASICS, Paris is ASICS. What other ones are recently? I feel like I'm forgetting one that I like just did. But yeah, Tokyo. Sydney's ASICS, yeah.
Yeah. I know Falmouth, Cherry Blossom.
Yeah, ASICS has a ton of them.
LA.
Wait, Paris real fast, because I was just talking to someone who ran that. There was cobblestones, like a lot of them.
Okay, so again, this is again me not knowing a lot about the course, but yeah, the last, it was kind of mean. It was like a really, really hard course. And then the last, like, what was this? Like the last 5K was like all on cobblestones. Oh, and I was like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? This is so miserable.
Like I would assume people fall. Like that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean there was people that were just like, I mean obviously people hit the wall in a marathon, but it was like there was like the top runners in the world, they're like walking at this point. I was like, I don't blame you. This is really tough. Like
Yeah. No, thank you. Sydney sounds good. Gold Coast sounds good. Australia. I think we just stick with Australia.
Go to Australia. Yeah, I think it's great. They just did LA Marathon too.
Yeah.
Right.
But what I was trying to get at, like a lot of times when you're doing a race, you can get either an appearance fee or a, you know, a bump, an incentive to come run certain races. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you work out on your own, or is that something who manages those partnerships for you?
Like who comes to you and says, My agent, Brendan Riley, who's in Boulder, he's been great. Like he figures all that out because, yeah, that's like the awkward part of it. You're like, oh, I don't want to have to deal with that kind of stuff. So it's nice when you just give that task to somebody else.
Yeah, does he come to you with like a ticker tape and be like, here's your race options for this spring? Or do you go to him and say, you know, I really would love to run this race. Do they have a budget for stars such as myself?
Yeah, it's kind of me. Like I'll come with like so many options where he's like, you need to rein it in. You've got like 20 races you want to do. But I mean, we're already trying to figure out this fall, which is crazy. I'm like, it's March and we're already figuring out like September, October, like in the world championship standard just came out and it's a lot. It's, I want to say it's 223.30. So it's like, okay, like how, where are we going to go to run that? And you know, things Berlin. Like that. So all that kind of plays into like your mind when you have to decide.
Did I hear you say Berlin?
Honestly, Berlin's actually my last. I'll get all my stars if I run Berlin.
That's us too.
Yeah, let's all do it this year.
Let's all get our six stars.
I know. Well, I did COVID London when it was.
Yeah,
that was my favorite London though, because that Sarah Hall kicked finish was probably one of the most exciting finishes I can recall. There's that, and I'm gonna forget the woman's name who just finished Laz's race. Now I'm blanking on everything.
Oh, Paris?
Yeah.
You mean Barkley?
Barkley Marathon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was what, like Sunday? Didn't that just happen?
Yeah. Crazy.
Insane.
How many years have you been with ASICS?
I have been with ASICS since 2020, and then I actually re-signed my contract, so I will be with them for 4 more years, which is really exciting.
Oh, wow. Nice. That's awesome.
So 2028, we got our shot at getting Lindsay Flanagan as a sponsored Believe in the Run athlete.
And it's great. And ASICS is, they're so great to work with. I mean, you know, like, I feel like you guys are in all the functions now. And yeah, it's just like, I feel lucky to be with a brand that like, obviously they care so much about my running, but they like care about me a lot as a person. And yeah, I mean, they've all been great. I heard that they even took at the trials, they like took everyone to Epcot. I was like, that sounds like it was a great time.
Yeah, we didn't get to go.
Well, I was invited, but we had other plans. But yeah.
They're really nice to women. No, I'm kidding. They're an amazing team.
How do you feel about social media? Because I feel like that's now become like a expectation almost from some brands. But I don't like. Do you have a pressure to do anything, or is it kind of like whatever you want?
Yeah, and I know that a lot of people do have that. And it was interesting when I like re-signed my contract. Obviously, social media is a lot different now than 2020. And I was like, oh, I wonder if there's going to be like, you need to post this or do this. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing, like, which is amazing that they're like, Ben has always said, like, I care about performance. Like, I care about like you being like beating people, competing well. Like, for some reason for them, like social media, he's just like never been like, this is something you need to like prioritize.
I think, you know, what Ben's saying, which I think is interesting, is your performance does more for ASICS than you showing a get ready with me video or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I do think he's wrong about like whether or not you can pack a ASICS jacket faster than somebody else. I think that's high quality content that, you know, roll that beautiful footage, Megan.
Anyway. I think I failed that challenge, but I nailed the trivia when we did it.
You did nail the trivia.
So impressed with your trivia.
Jurassic Park was one of them.
We should definitely do a trivia night, and you're on my team.
Yeah.
We're doing it again, which is typically terrible at trivia, so I got really lucky that day.
you sold us off.
I am curious, though, because I do love – I think that women's running has been so interesting because women have been more – open about sharing on social media and Instagram and everything like that. So you can kind of all of a sudden know the personality behind some of the runners. So I do feel that there's a fun part for the pro athlete to do it. But on the flip side, I feel like it can also be a distraction or even something that can throw your game off, especially if you're concentrating on doing that instead of the things that, you know, resting or whatever it is that you should be doing. For you personally, how do you like to use social media?
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, it is fun. Like, you want people to feel like they can connect with you and you're not like this robot, like human being, just like running these races. So I think it is important. Like, and it's motivating. Like, I mean, I do like hearing other people's stories and seeing what they put out there. Like, I've never been great at being like, oh, look at me, like, look at what I'm doing, but maybe I need to get better at that. Cause in my mind, I'm like, oh, people don't really need to see this, but I'm like, no, maybe they do want to see it. Like, they can like see my workout or like see what I'm doing. Like, I'm not against sharing. A lot of times the thing is like, if I do a lot of workouts solo, I just don't have anyone getting the content. Right. I would post content. I honestly just don't have anyone out there getting it. So
you need somebody on a bike.
I do. And that's like when I was in Australia, I actually got like a decent amount of content because I was like with other people. But when I'm back here, I was like, I promise I'm running. I just don't, I don't have anyone filming me.
So yeah, it says it. If we don't see it, we don't know what's happening. We gotta find someone who wants to ride a bike next to you, capture it all.
Otherwise, sure. You might as well just run 30 miles a week.
No one knows what you're doing.
Okay, Lindsay, this has been super fun. I could chat to you all day long, but thank you for coming back on the podcast. I think you're only maybe like one of three people that have been on the podcast twice.
Yeah. Oh, so,
it means we really love you because we only bring people back that we like a lot.
I think it's been Lindsay, Kira, and our drunk recap with Emma counts as two, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks for having me. I could talk with you guys all day. Like, we just need to go to the Sky Bar.
Yeah, we'll fly to Australia together and talk for 17 hours.
Yeah, I don't think that the trials would have been a good post drinking interview for you. Would have been great for us.
It's good. We'll wait on that one. We'll do it again. We'll do another one.
We'll get another one.
For sure. All right. Well, thank you again for chatting with us. This was super fun. And I hope you get better soon and we see you on a start line.
Yes. Thanks. And I hope I get to just like hang out with you guys again soon.